Welcome to the town, baby.
We swarm.
Welcome to the town, baby.
We swarm. Let them know.
We swarm, baby.
We swarm, baby. All day long.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another week and another episode of Tales from the Terradome. Before we get started, I just want to say, man, prayers, thoughts and prayers out to Gabe Williams, his dad, their family, their friends, everybody affected. That was nasty. I'm glad, you know, Gabe Prosody had surgery. He's all right, but his dad's still in the hospital. So anything they need, don't be afraid. Like, reach out. If they need something, help them out. Hokie Nation, we're a family. But tonight, we are here. I got an OG in the building. Y'all know him, man. We're here to talk about some, we're here to talk Duke. We're here to talk a little Hokie outlook, talk a couple things. He's the OG Vic. His name is Dwight. Y'all know him, man. How you doing, Dwight? How you feeling?
I'm good, man. Thanks, D. Thanks for having me on, man. It's another day in paradise on the land of the living, man. So I'm good, man. You know, I'm fighting these allergies. So hopefully your listeners understand I'm not talking under the table, and then I'm just not 100%, man.
Nah, they respect it. We all play hurt sometimes.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
We all play hurt sometimes, man. Hey, man, you've been pretty vocal on the internet about, I guess, the season and, like, I guess kind of where is your head at from former athlete, alum, still connected, still around, still on the heart in the heartbeat of Hokies. How are you feeling, man?
Hey, yo, I'm hurting, D. I'm disappointed. You know, I see a lot of y'all on Twitter or X. I'm gonna keep calling it Twitter. I don't give a damn.
It's Twitter.
And I see y'all and on Sundays, everybody's got the Giants and Cowboys and 49ers and Commanders or whatever and the Chiefs. And then, you know, Friday, I'm sure people like me still follow high school ball. I do, but text my only love when it comes to football. I do parlays, I do fantasy football. But I don't have a team. And I've said this before on Boundary Corner Pod. I've said this in Twitter Spaces with my guy, Don V. And I'm married to Tech Football because I helped build it. I used to write for Rivals. For about 2 or 3 years, I had a column called Hokie Haven. Not was on Hokie Haven. It was called Vic's Viewpoints or something like that. Then I did another one when 247 emerged. So think about like what my family, we were just talking before we went, you know, and recorded this, but my wife went to Tech, me, Mike Marcus, our other cousin, Kalithia went there, was on the tennis team. She became a recruiting host. She went there. My other cousin, Octavia, went there. She's a lawyer. And she got her political science degree. So you got a lot of family that we all went to Tech. So think about the years I've invested into this program. And, you know, I really want to see it do well. Like, not just football, but the university. But I didn't really buy into the playoff hype. I thought this would be a 9-win team, 8-win, with a chance to really, you know, steal a win against maybe a Miami or a Clemson. That would be like the 9th win. I knew it would be a long shot. I thought Drones, I have no problem with him getting some preseason Heisman consideration because a lot of quarterbacks, he's not the first or last quarterback that had a really good year or a promising year and come back the following year with a lot of talent around him to be mentioned as a dark horse. Mauricio Sejo was mentioned as a dark horse. Tyrod Taylor was mentioned as a dark horse. Jim Druckenmiller was mentioned as a dark horse. He's not the first or last Tech or UVA or Maryland or Ohio State or Alabama player. You can go across all Power Four schools. When a high-profile quarterback comes back or running back, they're going to be mentioned because there's the 9,000, I'm being exaggerative, but there's a bunch of publications out there that all do their dark horses. Watch out for this guy. This guy's on this watch list. So it's not unusual. What has been unusual is, you know, I've been vocal because, you know, I just feel like sometimes I don't know what we are as a team. Sometimes we come out and we look fantastic against Miami, against Clemson. Vanderbilt, they came out and looked flat, but then they fought all the way back, and you up 27-20 with a few minutes left on the road. And I was not pissing on Vanderbilt like a lot of people were. I don't know why fans do it, but they're fans for a reason. They don't understand that last year is last year, meaning Vanderbilt has been a doormat, but that coach is fighting for his job. He brought in 30-plus transfer players, and with the portal, it's the equalizer, so it can help. It's like the three-point shot in basketball. You can be an inferior team, you get hot from outside, and you cooking with grease. Tech sometimes in the first half or in the second quarter looks like they're cooking with grease. In the third quarter, it looks like all the eyes on the stove went out. It just looks like we can't get a burner going, man. It's like, yo, what's going on? Yo, anybody got a light? You know, it's just like, what happened? And excuse me, it's just I'm hurting, man, because I don't have a favorite team but Tech. So Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, Saturday at noon, and whatever time we playing, you know, I got the podcast stuff popping, but I check for Tech. I go to the spring game. There was a time until the last few years of the Fuente area, I went to 16, 17 straight spring games. Never missed one. And people may say, you know, the spring game ain't the regular season. For me, that I'm just trying to paint a picture for anyone that doesn't know me, how invested I am. I came and I did the pregame radio shows. You know, I did that with Kyle Bailey and then Danny Noakes. Pearson Prelo did a few with me before he came back to coach. He was coaching at Radford, and he would do the pregame show. So I came on before Bill Roth and Mike Burnham. So I've been everywhere all over this program as a former player. You know, so when Tech loses, okay, I lost some games when I was at Tech. It's more so how we lose and like what we're doing, the rhyme and reason. You know, I can go on and on about issues I see, but I'm a rational person. So I'm just like, okay, well, we do this well, let's build on this. And I know pride means well. I went on record, I stand on it, and I'm a pride guy. I know there's a contingency of our fan base that may feel different. I'm not really trying to argue with people because right now, when you're 5-5, just like a fan base divided, half the team feels this way, fans, the other half feels the other way. You're 5-5. You are what your record are. You are an average team, mediocrity at best. I know about the 1-point loss record, one possession game, whatever you want to call it, but I just feel like when I look at Tech, it's a story of what could have been, even though there's two games left, possibly three. It seems like that's been the story, really, if you count the last few years of Bema's era into what we are now, as to what could have been. And I think that's why fans are frustrated, because if you think about Matt Ryan game, you know, what could have been if Josh Morgan catches an onside kick or we go for it and go up 17 versus doing a quick kick? What could have been if, you know, Brandon Knorr wasn't benched in the first half against Kansas in the Orange Bowl in 2008? You win that game, you win a record 12 games, first time ever in Virginia Tech history, 12 games. You know, what could have been if my cousin didn't get suspended from the team with that talent coming back? I really feel like they play Oklahoma that year for the national championship, but instead they had to play Brian Randle or maybe the other kid early. I don't know. The point is that that's what is frustrating Tech fans, is the what could have been. What could have been if, you know, in 99, not 99, but in 2000, or 99, 99 when Chiron Stith and Ricky Hall got hurt and Anthony Midget got hurt, and you're playing some young guys and Ronya Whitaker and Larry Austin, who ended up being all-world cornerbacks, all-conference cornerbacks for Tech, but they were young, going against one of the dynamic receivers in college football history, and Peter Ward. And you look at 2000, if Mike, my cousin, doesn't get the high ankle sprain, it was number three or number two versus three with Miami and Tech in the Orange Bowl, but he wasn't 100%. Him and Andre Davis were both hampered. So that what could have been is a lot of programs talk about it, but we seem to be stuck in that what could have been mode. And somehow, some way, we got to learn, not we, because I don't coach and play no more, but they got to learn, they got to find a way to get over that. But I'm just disappointed, man. Like, I get to this point in the season, I'll wrap it up with this, is that I miss Dan. I miss being relevant.
Yeah.
I miss, like, I'm gonna tell you right now. I've said this to media guys like David Till and Mike Barber. And I know Andy Bitter. Outside of Hokie Nation and UVA, the Wahoo Nation, in 2 weeks, nobody cares about that game but our fan bases. Because that game used to be a premier rivalry. I played in it when it was a premier rivalry. Nobody gives a damn about that game but UVA and Tech. Even if both teams are bowl eligible, I know if we win Saturday, we're in the bowl game, but you still want to beat UVA. And I know they're trying to build something too, but that's what saddened me. Because back when it was just we were the two premier programs, JMU didn't really have anything. They were Division I AA. Liberty didn't have football. ODU didn't have football. William Mary and Richmond, great schools, universities, but they're more about academics. It was all about Tech and UVA, and they had all the in-state players for the most part, household names all over the field. But to see the playoff races, I remember waking up on Sunday morning, checking the ESPN bottom line or my ESPN app, trying to see if we moved up from 16 to 12 in the rankings, or wondering if this team loses, if we could, move up and get a rematch with this team. Or, man, we again, what could have been? We had USC beat if we can get into the rematch. But at least we were relevant in November, man. You
Yep.
know, I mean, I remember speaking of UVA, I remember when my cousin Marcus was leading the team and they were playing I forgot who they oh they beat UNC. They won that game. Not UNC, that was Logan Thomas. We won that game and we went down to Charlottesville and we smoked them. And they had Ahmad Brooks, a really good team that year. And Tech put 50 something on them, right? Brandon Noy went crazy, Cedric Humes. And we got into the ACC championship game because Miami lost to Georgia Tech at home. And I remember feeling like, hey, even though it was a long shot, I remember thinking, Dan, if these two teams lose in their conference championship, we'll be all right. But then what do? We lose to Florida State in 2005 in the inaugural ACC championship. Typical Tech. But
Yeah.
at least, Dan, and to your listeners, at least we were relevant and playing for something bigger than the ACC, and we were a relevant program. Irrelevancy sucks. It's
Yes.
just, it, no one cares. If that's the part, like, I mean, I still wear my Tech stuff loud and proud, and people know Tech. I know Pride's trying to bring the brand back, but it's heartbreaking when you're happy that you finally broke a streak against ODU on the road.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, that's disgusting. Yeah, man, it's kind of like, we had everybody return, right? Or like the most returning people in the nation. We finished the season hot last year. Seemed to have figured it out. The emergence of the return of College Football 25, the video game everybody been waiting on, comes back. Everybody's playing with Tech. They're hyping up
Uniforms.
Jones. Yeah, new uniforms. They look good. And now it's like, we could finish 7-5, go to a bowl game. In my opinion, they have to finish 7-5 because if you beat Duke and then lose to UVA, nobody cares. You can't lose to UVA, so you gotta go 7-5. I mean, you could lose to Duke and then beat UVA, go 6-6, and go to a bowl, but that's the ultimate failure to be playing UVA for bowl eligibility again,
You don't want that. Listen,
Nah.
all I don't really engage. I see all the jokes. I got a lot of guys that when I was there at Tech that and even now kids I've helped get into UVA, not academically, but train them or mentor them for football. And the truth of the matter is that the reason why you can't lose to UVA is because UVA is like us, but in a situation where we're still considered the better program, a better team, even with our issues and inconsistencies, the perception is that, well, Tech takes football really seriously. Tech has more talent. They have a better recruiting class. And you lose the UVA and you open the door. One thing Tech has been able to benefit from in the state and just with their university in regards to football is that for the last 27 years, 25 years maybe, UVA has been pretty much an inferior program. They've had talent. They've had some moments with the kid Perkins I really liked, and they've had some teams. They did beat Tech a few years ago at home, but They haven't won since at Virginia Tech since I was a senior, a redshirt senior. Think about that. Shows how old I am, but y'all call me OG for a reason. That's 1998.
Yeah.
So you've been able to benefit the fact that your strongest competition as far as money and comp, you know, in-state recruiting is UVA, and they haven't really taken advantage of Tech's issues. So even one year when we all thought they were going to beat Tech, UVA fumbled the ball, Perkins in overtime, and Tech won that game. I just knew UVA was going to wipe the floor with us that year.
Yeah.
So you think about that. I feel like in order, I don't even want to say salvage the season. I feel like you have to win these next two. You know, Don V and other people say, oh, bowl games don't matter. I've never said they matter like they did when I played, but I feel like practice time, exposure for the players, getting a chance to go somewhere they may never been before, and get another win under your belt is a huge thing. Being 8-5 is an improvement from being 7-6 last year. You go 7-6, Pride can say, hey, we didn't do some things right. We fell short on this, but hey, we ended the season with three straight wins. It's all about branding and selling. You can go in the living room and say, we win eight games. 8-5 is not something we can brag about with the upper echelon of college football, but 8-5, given what's been going on with injuries and issues like that, is still something you can build on because it is an improvement. It's just the eight wins came in a way we didn't think they were going to come in. You lose to Duke. If they come out, I don't know who's playing. I see the questionable stuff. It doesn't matter. They have enough talent. They should still be able to beat Duke. You lose to Duke on the road, and if it's bad or it's by two scores or whatever it is, and we don't take care of business, morale's going to be hurting coming into Thanksgiving week. You start to wonder if players are going to check out. UVA has an uphill battle themselves with SMU, who is highly underrated. Damn good. I've watched them play four times. They are for real. You know, so it's a sad state of affairs if you have two teams limping into that game trying to get that bowl win. And if you paint a picture where Tech finishes 5-7 and UVA gets the bowl eligibility on Lane Stadium, forget the trolling by the Wahoos. You will have, and I'm including Fuente, you will have the biggest mayhem S show ever on Twitter by Tech fans. It's going to be bloodshed. It is going to be bloodshed. It's going to be DMs being released, memes, Twitter spaces going 4 hours. I'm just telling you the truth. I can say I'm just telling you, you do not want to give that any life. And I mean, not UVA. I'm talking about the culture of falling short and having people doubt your vision and everything you've built this program up to be with your leadership. If you're Pry, Bowen, and the rest of those guys, you got to do whatever it takes to win these last two.
Yeah.
You still got people that haven't burned their red shirt that you can play to help you win. So when I say whatever it takes, I don't mean gadget plays. I'm saying like a sense of urgency. If somebody's not getting it done, get them out the game and put in an 18, 19-year-old that may give you a spark.
Yeah.
You feel me?
Yeah. Sometimes that innocence and inexperience is an advantage because they just go all gas, no brakes and make something happen.
I'm just saying, dog, I go back to stuff. You probably hear me because you and I roll in the same circles. If you look at, I said this before, when Bieber was long gone, this is 04. They started that season off 2-2, and they were starting my guy Richard Johnson. Justin Hamilton was back on offense. They had USC on the ropes in FedEx Field. I was there. They had him on the ropes, lost 23-13.
And bullshit, the offense, OPI.
Brian Randall was doing his thing, but the offense just wasn't quite getting where it needed to be. They had a tough loss at home in Lane Stadium to NC State, where they gave up either 9, 8, 9, 10 sacks. And then Beamer said, you know what? Eddie Royal, you're starting. Justin Harper? He went with the youth movement in week five. He went with all the young receivers, David Clowney, all of them. He said, let's go.
Yeah, Josh Morgan, saying, Josh Hyman.
Hyman, that's his name. My guy, shout out to Josh Hyman. All those guys. I used to always get those Joshes confused. Hyman, Josh Morgan. But you know what? Those guys were not starting. They were playing some. He was going with the seniority. And I think, Dan, I'm just telling you, this is my gut. This has not been leaked to me. This is just my feeling when I watch them play. I feel like some guys are being forced into action because of their NIL deals, or maybe because of seniority, or because they've been there. And I'm sorry, man. If you're not getting it done, if you're dropping passes, missing blocks consistently, because I got beat. I got, you know, I messed up. I'm talking
Everybody
about
gets beat
like,
sometimes.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about, like, if you got a kid who wants to win or wants to compete, throw him in there for two plays.
Right.
Let's see what pops.
Exactly.
I don't know, man. It's just, it's. I speak for a lot of people. I'm sure when you run this, it's going to be like, people going to be like, thank you. Because, you know, I talk to so many people who feel what I say and what I'm saying resonates with them. Because the thing about this, I'm not about to advocate for anybody to be fired. But the one thing I learned from my time playing to raising a family, being married, having a mortgage. You know, I'm a long way from Collegiate Suites and Fox Ridge Apartments. I'm a long way from Eastern Newport News in Hampton, Virginia, where I grew up at. I live in Northern Virginia, the suburbs. So I know what it means to have bills and financial stresses and successes. So my money and time is very valuable to me. So when I see, and I'm not talking, I don't know figures, but if I know a kid is making 80,000, 400,000, and the coach is making this, and we're calling timeouts when we don't have them or fumbling the ball. Like, to me, it's too much money involved in collegiate sports for us to look inadequate and have poor time management and to be confused on where we're supposed to be and lined up. I can't accept that. I can't. And I'm speaking from someone who sweated and cried and really cares about Tech and did all that when I was there. And you know, injuries are part of the game, but I just feel like right now it looks like we came into this season with a lot of expectations, but maybe we fell victim to those expectations, not understanding when you are expected to ball out, you have to be more aggressive and work twice, if not three times as hard than if you would if you were Wake Forest or somebody that they didn't expect anything from.
Yeah, the thing that nauseates me, I guess, is in the first year of no divisions in the ACC, you got Florida State, who's bad. And then you have Clemson, who is looks beatable, like, for the first time in years. And then it just feels like wasted opportunity that we didn't string enough games to be in the ACC championship game. Or at least, like, man, really in contention.
Man, you're spitting the truth. I said, I do tomorrow morning, I'm on Big Dog. Shout out to my man, Rick Watts. I'm on Big Dog Sports Radio tomorrow morning at 8:30. Excuse me, 8 o'clock, 8:35 I go on every Thursday morning. And we did a recap of the game last Thursday. And I said, the thing that sucked about that loss is that is not your dad's Clemson team. That Clemson team, is very, very beatable. That team, you had them with the block field goal, the fumble, the pick or whatever. You had forced about two or three turnovers. And the offense just, it looked weird. It looked like, again, what are we trying to do? You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
The Clemson game was a game you had everything there. You had them in the first half. And we just, the trick play, the throwback pass, why? Why? You were already getting down the field. Just, it's so many head scratches. You know, you got Pop, the quarterback. If we all know Kyron's been hurting long before the Georgia Tech game, right?
Right.
So why not bring Pop in and use him like Greg Boone, like the wild turkey? Because, you know, he did lead us on a touchdown drive when Schleese, I can't pronounce kid's name, he went out and he came in. And you know the reason why? I mean, Malachi was running hard, but everybody just thought Pop was going to keep the ball. So the hole opened up. What I'm saying is, you remember Greg Boone, right? Shout out to my guy, Greg Boone.
Oh, I know Greg Boone. Yeah.
We used him in the red zone, right? We used him in the red zone. So, like, my whole thing is, like, they called it the wild turkey. Use Pop in the red zone. If Kyron can't run, bring him in. Do a little fake. I ain't going to be no OC right now, but fake it to him. Do this, whatever. Like, use what you have. It's just like when my guy got hurt, Tootin got hurt against Georgia Tech. We were 21-6. Why is he still in with 3.5 minutes left or how many? Four? You have Malachi.
Yep.
I said in week three, when I was asking to keys to sustain success, I said you have to develop your other backs and get them carries, because even though Tootin is durable, they key on him. He's your best offensive weapon. Use Malachi, or my guy, I call him Little Pelo, Pearson Prelo's son, who prior to getting injured was looking like he was the second best back. You got Coney. I know Coney fumbled the ball against Syracuse, but every time he touches it, he still has that burst.
Yeah, young kid's going to cough it up every now and then. They got to learn to tuck that in. But my biggest thing is this whole offense, the new additions to this team that play happened on defense. So when everybody on the offense comes back, when you're doing the install in the spring and the summer, it's the same. I mean, you might add a couple wrinkles in that are new, but why does it look so discombobulated? Like it's the same players. Like, you know this offense, you know how it runs.
I talked to Tyler Bourne at the spring game. I was at the Friday spring practice, and he was very confident. He said they everyone is familiar with their roles. And here's the thing: don't let the mediocrity overshadow the fact that the Gosnell brothers have been clutch. Lane has been clutch. Lane's been clutch. I love him. You know, you've had some players within the offense who have shined. I think it's almost though like Kyron in the offense, Drones in them. The whole offense is a unit. They play like nobody had game tape from last year.
Mm-hmm.
You surprised everybody when Drones came in, because nobody had him on the scouting report, and he was a breath of fresh air. You know, you saw what he could do as the season progressed, but you had no tape on him. So everyone else hears the expectations too from the media, and they know Tech's supposed to be a good team. So people watch tape, as my coach used to tell me. They're on scholarship too, son. So the truth of the matter is that Virginia Tech offense, again, there's games when I'm like, Bowen's calling a great game. I feel like he's doing great. And then we kind of just overthink some things. Like, I go back to the Syracuse game. The kid, not Green, I might have been Gosnell or Green. I can't remember. Not to say this because they're both white receivers, but I think it was Gosnell. We threw it like a long nine route to them. So we were beating Syracuse DBs down the field. We stopped going to it.
Yep, that was Gosnell. He was catching it everywhere.
He was catching. I love him. Yeah, I love that kid. Like, this is the thing. Don't overthink it. The one reason why before the half, the fourth quarter, we didn't go for overtime. I mean, we settled for overtime. It's because why not go for something? We are so afraid to be great. Like, I'm not second-guessing pride. I'm second-guessing the fact that we or they didn't trust their play. Like, I know you got a backup quarterback, but he was in the zone that game. He was playing
He was
well.
Crushing.
So what if you pick up 30 yards on a PI penalty? Or do we have no plays that we practice and install, or in situation in practice where we have, hey, guys, we got 30 seconds, 35 seconds, two timeouts, we're at our own 35. Let's go. Break. And then you go out there. I'm just saying. I don't know, man. It's like they say, it's done deal now. I know we need to look forward to Duke and UVA. It's just that the theme of this podcast presented by me, Dwight Victory Life, is what could have been. That is kind of like my thing. What could have been? Like, I look at SMU and Miami. I look at these other teams. And I'm like, man, not the playoff teams, but teams that are ahead of us. I'm like, Indiana, I know that's a hot topic with Tech fans. I'm like, what is the disconnect? What is going on internally in the athletic department with football from the practice field to game day? Is it the strength and conditioning program, which I've been really big on? I've been harping on that. Is it, you know, I know with Fuente, talking to Eric Kumar, a lot of guys, they couldn't talk during pregame meals. And he was not he liked some players, but a lot of players didn't rock with him. So you can see that. I felt like guys, when he was there, were transferring at halftime in the portal. You know, but I look at Tech and I'm like, Fry's a lovable guy. He loves his players. He's a positive, upbeat guy. Is it, you know, what is it? You got some dogs on defense. I've been big on Caleb Woodson.
Caleb's nice.
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of guys that you would love to coach, and kids, of course we know about APR. I mean, again, there's talent there. What is it? What's going on? I don't know. And That's the million-dollar question. The Texans got to look at, regardless if they win the last three games or last two games, they gotta look themselves in the mirror as a staff. You got to hold on to some players too, man. You got to re-recruit everybody because roster management and the NIL era is huge. Who knows who's going to leave? But my whole thing is, one thing I give Pryor a lot of credit for is the players he's recruited, him and his staff. The younger guys or the new, they seem to be the right guys.
Yep.
They seem to
Yeah,
have
the younger talent looks. I mean, a lot of times they look better than the people that they're starting in front of them. But like off the field stuff, like every like off season Pryor, champion. But like they just gotta figure out what's happening on Saturdays. That's where the bread is buttered, you know?
I think the offseason probably know what you mean, like all the stuff with in ACC Media Day and the podcast and the recruiting and the coaches shows or things they do when they come to Nova, 804, 703, DC. That stuff is great. He does a great job. And I know him, and I know he means what he says, and I think that also is like the anti-Fuente establishment. Like Fuente didn't like that stuff. But I think the thing I look at our program, we got to get back to being mentally and physically tough. Like a lot of guys talking about, I'm a dog, I want to smoke. You ain't built like that for real, though. Like, I'm just saying, like, I'm just saying, you're not, you know, like, it's manufactured toughness. So, like, at the end of the day, I'm going to point to some stuff where I talk about toughness. Syracuse, we up 7, 31-24 on the road. 31-24 on the road. Syracuse gets the ball after we kick it off to them. You get a stop, you win the game. You get a stop, it's over. We win. On the road, in a place we've only won one time with the goal at quarterback. They literally ran the ball down our throat and then scored. They didn't do anything. They threw it a couple of times on third down. They ran the ball down our throat. That is an attitude. That is like we got – don't tell me about the lunch pail if you're not going to really understand what it means to carry that thing.
Yep.
Here's another example. You're on the road against Vanderbilt, and y'all know you're on the road, and I know it was hot as hell out there. There were people really getting sick. It was, right?
Yeah.
However, mental and physical toughness. You're up 27-20. Ollie Jennings catches a deep ball. There's a blown coverage. You up. The crowd's going crazy because it's pretty much 80-20 Tech fans.
Yeah.
And you literally let them drive the ball down the field to send it to overtime.
Yep.
What? That's a mindset. Again, Clemson, your defense is playing lights out. Clemson quarterbacks, he looks like the quarterback that wanted to play the quarterback in the longest yard with Adam Sandler and Chris Rock. That's how bad he looks. Clemson looks inept on offense. Your defense is balling. What happens? Yep. Offensively, nothing. Nothing. Again, mental toughness. Like, I try not to talk about my era or back in the day because we do too much reminiscing as Tech fans, but I can only go off the dogs and examples of what it means because we're too quick to say, oh, he reminds me of Brandon Flowers. He's the best linebacker in Tech history. Nah, bro, y'all got to stop doing that because of DB, Vince Hall, Myron Newsom, Vegas Robinson, Cody Grimm, they were dogs.
Yeah.
When you needed a play, they made a play. There's a lot of forgetfulness when it comes to Tech fans. We say, oh, we own this school. We used to beat Clemson, to beat Miami, beat UVA. If you remember, many of those games were close, and that dog we need made a play. For example, we beat Miami in a row one time, 17-10. Brandon Flowers and Frank Gore going back and forth. Two of the best backs in ACC history. Tech won that game because Dwayne Brown, if my memory serves me correctly, blocked a field goal. I believe it was Dwayne Brown. Either way, the point I'm getting at, or whatever, we got a sack by a DB. I just remember the defense and the offense stepped up. It was an ugly win, but we won the game 17-10 on the road against a very good Miami team. And that's what I mean about their mindset, because those teams were physically and mentally tough. Just like the ACC team that went down in 04 and beat Miami at Miami after winning a very tough game against UVA. They won a very tough game against UVA. Their final stretch was Maryland, UVA, and then Miami. They beat UVA. It was back and forth. That was one of UVA's best team in ACC history with Elton Brown and those guys. And Tech was back and forth. And then Brian Randle threw two touchdown passes to Josh Heupman. I mean, one to Heupman, and Cedric Humes busted it open. And they won 24-10. And that's when Griffin, the DB, held up the sign and said, ACC champions. And Mel, what's his name? Kurt Hershey said, not so fast. Oh, you're getting a little ahead of yourself. And they went down to Miami and smacked Miami in the face with Jeff King and Jimmy Williams and those guys. Jimmy Williams was an asshole. That's my brother. I love him.
He was awesome, man.
He was an asshole in the field. He was an asshole. Eric Green, assholes, dogs. Yeah. They don't care. You know, and that's what people, when you hear DJ Parker and those guys, Ike Charlton and all them, and Andre Kendrick talk about, they're talking about a mindset. As much as people want to talk about money and NIL, I mentioned it too, and they talk about, oh, well, you know, these guys are making this much money. The coaches don't play. They coach. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you got to make a play. Nobody told D'Angelo Hall to take the ball from Roscoe. He just did it.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, he just did it, you know?
Like, I think perfect example is, like, for people listening, like, that, like, dog mentality, like, just, like, if you, like, happen to meet, let's say, like Lauren Johnson or Rock Carmichael or Tyrod Taylor or Davon Morgan or Xavier Adibi, like, you just feel it, like, immediately. Like, you feel the dog, like, you know that the dog is in them. Like, and you hear them speak, and it's there. Like, it's very clear that these, that you weren't taking shit from me.
Yes. That's it. That you, I'm telling you, same thing with a guy like Corey Moore. Corey Moore had that dog in him. And he wasn't big and tall like me, but he was so strong, and he willed his way to inspire his teammates. So many other guys, man. Again, I know some fans are maybe rolling their eyes when they hear this. It's too much memory lane talk. Well, here's the thing. I want a new era.
Yeah.
I don't mention my era unless I'm comparatively speaking to what I know works as far as building a program. And to me, it starts with the strength and conditioning program, your scheme, and the kind of young men you bring into your program. Are they going – because I don't – I heard some fans talking in the Twitter space. I was low-key just chilling. And they were like, oh, they're quitting. And these kids want to win. They never come out there. They're playing hard. They're not quitting. They're not like – it's not like before when, you know, guys, as I joke, but I was being serious, were transferring at halftime where they were like, I'm done. Thank you, Virginia Tech, Hokie Nation, for I'm gone, taking my talent. No, these kids are really trying to win. It's just that it's the culture you have to create. You know, it's just like, you know – there's so many layers to it, man. We need to get back to just playing Virginia Tech football, which is toughness and just being aggressive offensively and defensively, like taking it to the other team. You know, when you saw the best example of that, I'm going to tell you a couple of games. There's only been a few. There were two examples this season. I can go back to last season, but this season in particular, I was like, oh, this is Virginia Tech football. The Miami game.
Yeah.
And Boston College.
Yep.
The Miami game, because they were on Miami's sideline, they were talking, they were taking the ball away, they were physical, they were sacking Cam, they were on him, the defense and offense. It was like, I mean, they set the tone from the beginning of the game. We thought we had the game winner when Drone threw the touchdown pass to A.J. Green, but the point I'm getting at is they look like Tech. The Boston College game came out, sold out crowd, and they just were running the football at will. The play calling was on point defensively. Is Boston College good? No, neither are we. But I'm talking about the way we looked in those two games. We look like that's how Virginia Tech football I thought was going to look every game this year, win or lose. But that's an issue. You know, and I tell you what, I mentioned UVA. Imagine we had their schedule.
Yeah. That's crazy. I think our schedule ended up tougher than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, they played some.
And it's funny because everybody was surprised that they lost. I mean, they beat Pitt on the road.
Pitt's offense is not good.
Thank you, Dan. It's not. Pitt's offense ain't good. But one thing I respect Narduzzi is the team mirrors his attitude. And I know when Pitt comes on the field, what kind of team I'm getting.
Yep.
You know?
And Duke,
so,
I don't know what kind of team we're getting with Duke because it looks good. Like, they played the game of their life against SMU when they lost. But, like, they look good against Miami for a while, but then they'll just come out and, like, stink it up also.
Duke plays hard. Duke plays hard. There's going to be a ton of Tech fans there. It's a night game, so a lot of Tech fans going to be there nice and toasted. That's a very winnable game for Duke. Duke, I watched them, like you said, I watched them about four times this year. They're a solid team. Very beatable because they have some good personnel. I think Manny Diaz, the guy from Miami that's coaching there now.
Yeah.
I watched that game against SMU, and again, he's going to give you some head-scratching play calls. He does it every game. He should have never went for two because they had momentum. Just go to overtime. You're at home.
Right.
And they had many chances to beat SMU, but Manny Diaz is going to give you a head-scratching play or two. Trust me. That's why I've always said some coordinators are not meant to be head coaches. Now, I'm sure somebody just heard me say that and says, well, what about Pride? I'm just saying, hey, I'm just saying some guys aren't. Manny Diaz has been a head coach a lot longer than Pride has. Now, with that being said, you know, you talk about that. If that, I'm sure that's going to come up in the comments or people are going to say something. People have been asking me what should happen. I feel like every staff has like a consultant type guy on their staff. That what's, you know, I'm a big movie guy, Dan. What's that in The Godfather, the concierge? You know, they.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need one like the guy that says, we can't go over there with the guns. We got to wait. You know, Michael, you can't kill a cop. You know, right? We can't.
Right.
We need somebody, you know, because people say, well, Beamer didn't have one. Yes, he did. His name was Coach Billy Height.
Yeah.
Billy Height was his guy. He was. I was there 5 years. I saw Billy Height. I said, Frank, let's burn one. I saw him lean over to talk to Frank and Billy. They would talk. They would during games. Like Billy Height was his right hand man. He didn't want to be a head coach. He was a running back coach, a damn good coach, a phenomenal recruiter, a DeMatha legend. So it's like if that would be my recommendation, I think Marv is a good coordinator. I know he's still there's some moments, but again, I thought he called a great game against Miami. He didn't miss, you know, those guys missed two sacks. They missed a sack. It was two guys that had Cam wrapped up. If they sack him, it's game over.
Yeah. I think both coordinators have clear cut for and against them. You know what I'm
saying?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
Like, Bowen put up 400 yards with backups against Syracuse in the dome. You know what I'm saying? Like, should have been enough to win the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then there's Clemson, where Marv calls it very well, and the offense doesn't do anything, and then we end up losing by 10.
Well, I mean, that's a great point. That's why I said you need, like, maybe somebody. I mean, you know, you look at Bud Foster took over when I was at Tech, and people forget this. I may not know this. When he was there, he was a linebackers coach. The defensive coordinator was Phil Almation.
Yep.
He came up with that bear front, the eight-man front, that was really big in the 90s. But Foster tweaked it and built on it. But before he was the head defensive coordinator, he was the co-defensive coordinator with Coach Sharpless, who went to Rutgers after a few years at Tech. So people don't realize Bud did not walk into that position. He rose to that position behind some guys, especially Almation, who was legendary at the time for decades in the college football defensive business. Like people, he was a household name during the 80s and 90s. So you talk about the here and now. The here and now is, you know, Jerry Kill came in that year and that saved Tech season when they finally went with him and he helped Brad Cornelison. And you had Hendon Hooker, who he was lights out. They went 8-5, ironically, that season, had a chance to win the Coastal. They lost to UVA that year on the road, but Perkins was the best player on the field that day. And if they say Hazleton catches that third down, I think Tech blows UVA out that day. But they said he dropped it, which, or he was short. Regardless, is you got to have help. You got to have people around you. Like Luke Skywalker had Yoda and Obi-Wan. Luke Skywalker had Obi-Wan and Yoda. I know that's fiction, but I'm saying is everybody has somebody, bro. Like, that's how I mentioned the Godfather movie. You need people in your corner that can really kind of help you because you're steering the ship of a Power Four program that has a intense fan base, a fan base that's tired of the what ifs, what could have been, and they really want to see the results. And I think for those that keep posting on my timeline, well, Beamer in his first year, listen, man, you can't go 2-8-1 and 5-6. You can't do that no more. Not
nope.
When schools are going from 4-8 to winning 9 games in 1 year. Like Vanderbilt is a good team. They're not great.
Yeah.
But South Carolina,
Diego Pavia is a difference maker for them. Yeah.
Exactly. You got to get, you know, and again,
Frank didn't have free agency, basically, is what it is.
Yeah, he didn't. It's a different era. Yeah, it's a different era. And who knows who would have stayed during that time when Tech was an independent trying to get in the Big East and you were on probation with no money. Like, people forget they were on probation when he took over from Dooley. So
yeah.
Don't compare this situation to Beans, bro.
And the staff situations are completely different because, I mean, we regard Torian Gray as the greatest DB coach we've probably ever seen, especially at Tech, but he took over from Whammy Ward, who was a hell of a DB coach too. Like,
thank you.
Yeah. So he didn't have to change the mentality. He just tweaked some techniques and kept it rolling with his own flavor, but Whammy was good.
Yeah, that's why I love you, my guy, because that was a trivia question. A lot of people don't realize, again, you just don't. With Torian Gray, who's my brother and teammate, he was, yes, he was amazing, but he also came back to Virginia Tech. He was under Whammy. Well, Whammy left. Whammy was great, but Torian Gray came from the NFL. He was working with the Chicago Bears. He was coaching elsewhere. Might have been, I don't have the book in front of me, might have been at Temple, but, like, he was everywhere. Then he came back, you know, and I mean, and the culture and the DBU culture was established. So he just kind of built on that, you know. He also taught his DBs how to ball hawk. Eddie Whitley and those guys and Jimmy and all those guys he coached. I don't know if he had Jimmy. Might have Brandy Flowers. I think so. But the point I'm
Flowers.
Getting at is, yeah, Flowers. Yes, yeah. Those guys were great. But if you talk to Flowers and all of them, they'll tell you, we anticipated routes, and we would jump routes. We also played the ball. My only nitpick with our DBs is that we play so much man, we don't do a good job of route recognition. A lot of times, like, dude, it's 3rd and 4. They're not going to stop and go. Jump the route. If the reason why DBU came, the mantra, the persona, the whole hashtag, is because Tech for decades scored on special teams and defense. A lot of that was interceptions and pick sixes. Eric Green and all those guys, when they made Brock Berlin rethink his life in football that night in Lane Stadium, because he threw like 2 pick sixes, one to Green and one to Michael Crawford. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like they were ball hawks. We have good DBs, but we just pretty much break up passes. We don't make, my son always says this, and I like this phrase, game-winning plays.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So it's just one of those things where, excuse my allergies, but it's one of those things where we have so much work to do, but it's not as bad as you think. But I just think one of the things we got to look at, regardless of how we finish, is the offseason, like really making sure whatever we've done so far, that we do well, we build on it, and have an honest conversation about what's not going well. You know, like, I just think, Dan, the strength and conditioning program is a huge part of what needs to really be looked at.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah, because there are times, like, against Rutgers in that game when we came back and tied it and I thought we were going to win, the first half, Rutgers just – they punked us the whole first half, up and down the field on defense and offense.
Yep.
I mean, they were punking us. It was a Big Ten physical mentality. It was almost like, we're coming in with no secret. We're going to run the ball. We're going to throw these routes. And they set the tone. If anyone listening right now says, well, all right, Vic, what do you need to do? What do we need to do against Duke to win? It's very simple. We can talk X's and O's and scheme and Duke's personnel group is very simple. Set the tone. Do you
punch
remember
him in
Dan?
The mouth.
Yeah. Do you remember Dan? The year Tech, when it was divisions, This is when they had a DB and Aaron Rouse and those guys and Vince Hall. And Tech couldn't play for the ACC championship yet because they lost on the road to Georgia Tech, the tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody in the conference felt Tech was the best team in the ACC. Wake Forest won the conference that year. That year, Tech and then night game, I believe the game was at 6 o'clock. I was going to go, but I couldn't go. Tech went down there and beat them 27-9. I mean, they beat the brakes off way. It was a physical just display of, you guys aren't really the best team. Everybody knows we just couldn't stop Georgia Tech's option. But when they went there, they set the tone. And Wake Forest was a damn good team that year.
Yeah.
And Georgia Tech was obviously good with Paul Johnson, that option. But Tech slipped up, couldn't beat them, couldn't get the ball back that year. But the rest of that year, that game, they went down to Wake Forest. I would love to see Saturday night, Tech come out all white. I don't know, white shirts. I don't give a damn what they wear. They come out and just, like, punch Duke in the face, kick an onside kick, up 7, go up 14-0, cause a sack, negate them, get them playing behind the chains, get the Tech crowd going to half, up 21-3, come out and win 31-17. That's what it would look like when it says set the tone. That's what I mean. Like, play to win. What are we saving plays for? And what are we doing? Like, play the way you played against Miami. Play the way you did against Boston College, man. Like set the tone. Like, be aggressive. And I will say Pride's been aggressive on fourth down, but I mean, when I say aggressive, not just that way, Dan, I'm talking about mentally. Like,
yeah,
set the tone. Like, make Duke rethink things. I know I went way back with the Wake Forest comparison because that's the part that frustrates me. I feel like Tech fans, including myself, we're so desperate for them to become relevant and be the team we think they can be. All we have is memories, like a damn love song.
Yeah, like all the way through high school, if we were outside the top 10, what the hell was going on?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like all we have is memories. I want to be – last year, I sat in that rain, and I had vowed I wasn't going to do that again. But I was like, yo, I'm going. Military boy, I live in the DMV.
Yeah, I was
Annapolis, there. 45 minutes, an hour at the most from where I live. And I went up there, and I know Tulane. Several of their players opted out. Tech was better anyway. But it was just good to be around Hokie Nation and to finish the season going 5-3 down the stretch and getting the seventh win and feeling like, okay, you in the stands, the game's in hand, and you're talking with the section around you like, yo, if he comes back and he comes back and he comes back, I'm talking offensively.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, you know, they could be all right. But – right now, we're not all right.
Nope.
But you and I don't play. And mm-mm. If I'm in that locker room, and I've been in the locker room enough to say that, all right, man, let's fight. Let's go out here win these last two games. Let's go to Duke. Because even with your backups playing in certain spots, you should be able to beat Duke at Duke. I believe Tech right now is a, what, 3-point favorite?
I think so.
Yeah, who knows what that means. We were favorites. The
yeah.
Yeah. Vegas be playing with you, bro. But yeah, man. I mean, I'm hoping they can get it done because this is gonna sound funny, but I feel because I have several coaches on that staff that are my friends and my brothers. I feel for those guys because I know they didn't see it going this way, and it's a mm-hmm. business. And the truth of the matter is when you have a team that's underachieving or having these tough losses, you see the tweets, you're on Twitter like me, you're on Facebook, if you're not, every social, Instagram, hell, even Snapchat, XM Radio, people talk. The Twitter yep. spaces, people want something to be done. So these are jobs on the line.
Yep.
I personally don't think it's at that point where you got to start thinking, okay, this, whatever. But I do think if you fall short, you do need to make some changes. That's just the way it is. If I wasn't getting it done when I played, I got pulled.
Right. I think even if you go 7-5, even if you go 7-5, I think there needs to be some changes
at
somewhere. Yeah.
You got to. You listen. I'm now. I can't believe I'm about to do this, but I know. You know. I get this when fans say it. It's too much money involved to be 7-5.
That's very true. Yeah.
It's too much money involved to be 7-5. Will I be happy if they win of Saturday night? Yep.
Hell yeah.
I'll be very happy. And I'll be very happy my Thanksgiving weekend if they keep the streak against UVA.
Yep.
Because it's still it may not matter to anybody outside of Wahoo Nation and Hokie Nation, but it still matters to us. And, you know, if that's all we got right now, I'll take it. But to underachieve and to fall short after a bye week, because to me, after a bye week, you got a chance to really kind of get some guys right, even some guys who may not be 100%. But you also get to kind of, you know, tweak some things, add in a new wrinkle. You know, that's what I'm looking for. Like, what did you do in the offseason? I know they got to make calls and recruit, but your class is pretty much almost done. You just got to hold on to them until signing day.
Yep. Which is earlier this year now, right? It's like first week of December.
It's always early now. You have the chance to do early, and you can do it in February. But you can lock some guys up, man. And, you know, if they can finish strong and bring in a kid who I think is top two best player in the state, and Jeffrey to over Jr.
Yeah, he's I think nasty.
He's a program changer. You bring him in, that young quarterback they got coming. There's some pieces on the horizon. I just, but the here and now, I need them to finish.
Yep. You got to finish.
Yeah.
And then you got to do something because, not to look too far ahead, but that first game next year, the narratives and the noise are going to be strong. And I guarantee you there's nothing more that Shane Beamer wants to do than beat Virginia Tech and vice versa. Probably wants to beat South Carolina because. That, you know, it doesn't have to be said.
I know. Let me tell you something. I would bring my wife in here. My wife's in the other room. Let me tell you something. Shane Beamer's a close friend of mine. That's my brother. Shane Beamer's a competitor. I used to play him with NC2A back in the day. I used to beat him when he beat me. He throw the sticks. Shane's a competitor. And I already know right now. I can tell you right now. He already has a game plan for that game. I already know Shane. Shane is going to come into that game. Especially if they finish strong like they do, he going to come into that game and he's going to unload the clip. He is going to, and again, I have no problem because it's competition. He's where he belongs and he's happy where he is. And he's building something special in South Carolina in regards to just the energy. You know, we've seen the video of him singing to his wife, and Shane's always been that way. Even when he coached here, and his dad was sick with the throat surgery, and he was interim coach in the military bowl when J.C. Coleman set that rushing record. And when Greg Stroman went crazy with the punt returns and the fumble recovery for it, he was chest bumping guys and falling. I was on the sideline that game. I ended up leaving early because I was sick. I remember that, but I was so happy to see Shane. And one thing about people say, you know, this is not a Bronny situation. This is not nepotism. Right. I've known Shane since 1994. He paid his dues. His dad opened some doors, but he went into the door and he earned it himself. A lot of coaches in the Big Ten and SEC respect him, and I'm happy to see what he's doing in South Carolina. And here's the thing, the what could have been, again, the theme of your podcast tonight, right? What could have been? Who knows what could have been if Shane came here?
I don't think it works out the way it does for him right now.
Bingo. I don't think it works out the way it does because I think sometimes it's good to leave home and make a name for yourself. And I think he's done a great job at South Carolina. It just feels weird because I went to a game down there, my wife and I believe it was Vanderbilt. It was, I don't know who it was, but I know we went down there last year and they have the whole Beamer ball thing. We looked at each other, me and my wife, I was like, well, I mean, I guess it is kind of Beamer ball.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
They own the trademark now.
Yeah, but I tell you what, man, looking ahead, you know, you got me thinking about that. I may go to that game, but, you know, I'm one of them guys. I really want to go when I feel like we have a chance to win. I hate going, driving or flying. I'm like, man, are we really? I don't know. You know, because South Carolina Gamecock fans are really cool people. They're a lot like Hokie Nation. But I don't want to be, what, an Atlanta Chick-fil-A kickoff?
Yeah.
I do not want to be in my cousin's city wearing my Tech gear here in Gamecock Nation troll us. I can't.
I can't, man.
And they're going to be deep like us, too, because they're closer. Aren't they closer?
I think they're closer. Yeah.
Yeah, they're going. But again, who knows, man? That's the beauty of sports. This is the beauty of sports. We don't know how this thing is going to go. You and I have our predictions. We have our thoughts. But, hey, man, Tech can come out here Saturday night and win 42-7.
I mean,
we don't know. That's the beauty of it. A lot of people have Miami, blowing us out. And Tech had their chances several times, and they, at times during that game, was the better team. And Miami is a national championship contender, and Tech went toe-to-toe with them. So, obviously, that's with the healthy drones and Kyron, but I'm just saying, like, at the same time, they showed some fight. They showed some grit. The play calling was great offensively, defensively. I thought they had a game plan. Caleb Wilson spied Cam real well. They turned the ball over. Miami did, and Tech really had some game. Again, what could have been, what if you kick the field goal and don't do the fake field goal, you win that game.
Yeah.
Remember? Yeah, see, I'm sorry, painful memory to anybody listening, but,
yeah,
you fake field goal, you don't need to do that. But I understand what Pryor was doing because it was only 4th and 3. You get it, but like Don V said on his Twitter space, and I agree, do you really even need to fake it? Leave your offense, because Tech's offense was driving down the field.
I would have let KD and Bashal and them handle that one.
Yeah, because Parker didn't block down. Sorry, guys, he didn't.
No,
I saw
he didn't.
It live. I said, number 7, he didn't block down, and they did a replay. Oh, guys, if he just – I was like, I saw it live.
Yeah.
The guy went right – anybody knows, I don't care if you're playing for the Gainesville Grizzly 8-year-old 8U division. The 8, you block down every time. MDM, the most dangerous man. You block down no matter what. Field goal, blitz protection, you're going to protect that first step, the closest to the quarterback. He stepped – out, he stepped with the wrong foot. That guy came in, penetrated the play, and you saw it.
Yeah, I saw it.
But that can't happen this week. It can't happen. I mean, and that's the problem. I think some Tech fans are frustrated. It's like, why does that keep happening? Is he not being coached up? That's what, coaching is. Like, hey, man, early in the season. Like, for example, Brian Randle came to Tech as a damn good quarterback. He was one of the best athletes in 757 Williamsburg rooting history. I know people say Williamsburg, it's a 757. And he had to learn how to play quarterback. And we had a very good quarterback coach. And I forgot his name. It wasn't Michael Kane. I forgot his name. But the point I'm getting at is Brian Randle, you saw him improve to the point by his senior year. He was a phenomenal ACC quarterback. He was first team. He led him to a conference championship. He played well in the Sugar Bowl against a great Auburn undefeated team. He was a good quarterback. He
should have beat them too.
Yeah, he got better. Like, and that's why for the fans talking about, okay, Vic, the players play, but coaches coach. You're right. Coaches do have to coach. And that's why I talk about like some of the issues you see, not all, that keep recurring. We got to look in the mirror as coaches and say, okay, if this guy's not getting it, let me look at this guy because he still has time. We haven't burnt his red shirt. He has – you do. The NCAA has switched up so much. You get players that can get 4 games to play in without burning a shirt.
Yep. And the bowl game don't count either.
Yeah, play him.
Yep.
Everybody's like, we're down to one running back, Coney. I'm like, dude, don't we got some red shirt?
Yeah.
Throw him in there. It won't. He got 4 games.
Yep.
Or bring in Pop. Let him be some of that run game, 3rd and 4, 2nd and 6. Let him get – Pop will get you 3, if not more.
Yep.
I'm just saying, dude, like, Dan, I know I'm being repetitive, but I told you, man, I'm disappointed. My whole thing is like, you got players that can make plays, man. You got some people you can use that you haven't really let them cook yet. Let them in the kitchen, man.
Yeah. Well, if drones can't go, I feel like we might see a little pop action. If Schley can't, because he's healthy right now, I think, but like he can't, I mean, things happen. So I feel like we might see a little Pop Watson, but I don't know.
Let them both play. I'm not saying that Sean Glennon and Tyrod Taylor, because they're not.
Right.
What I'm saying is that you can give a 2-quarterback system a go, especially if you had 2 weeks to prepare.
Yeah, even Frank played Randle and Marcus same time.
He played Randle and Marcus, and he also played Glennon and Tyrod. It worked well for him with Glennon and Tyrod. Now, granted, Glennon, man, you know, he won a couple of ACC championships. I mean, Tyrod, you know, I talked about benching Tyrod one night, a Saturday night at home against Duke. Tech won 14-10. Tyrod wasn't playing great. He got benched.
Yeah.
Sean Glennon came in that game and did some stuff. It's all about using what you got, man. We got some players in that program right now that, you know, you can use for a spot or two or for a quarter. You know, you don't have to hold yourself back because, to me, the fear of losing and the fear of losing my job was what motivated me as a player. I didn't want to
Yeah.
ever lose my job, and I didn't want to lose. So that motivated me.
Yep.
That's the way I would coach, too. I'm not going to coach scared. You know, I'm not. I'm not. I mean, I'm hoping that, because I know they pay attention to the stuff we post and say and text, and they listen to that stuff. They got hidden accounts in every Twitter space. I know this. I don't give a damn. I don't give a damn. They know. Y'all hear what? So I hope they take it personal, because it's not personal from us. It's just the truth in regards to how these people feel that love this program. The crazy thing about fans and podcasters like us, we want y'all to do well.
Yeah.
We want y'all to do well, bro. We want y'all to succeed.
Yeah. Like, I love seeing y'all and talking to y'all and, you know, having off season like drinks or whatever, like, but like I want you to win and you want you to win. So, well, if we're not doing that, I can't just be like, oh man, it's okay, because it's not okay.
No,
And they know it's
no.
not okay.
I want to see J.C.
Yeah.
Price and his wife, Jen. I want to see him retire there. I want J.C. because that's his dream job. You know, J.C., I love him. I'm biased, but I think he's a damn good
Yeah.
coach and a great guy. I want to see J.C. retire there. Pearson, he's been living up there for years. I want to see my guys at DB, even if they don't stay at Tech, go on to do. I want to see them win. Because, again, like we started off your show, your podcast, it's the only team I love, dog. Like, it's the only team I care about. Like,
Yeah.
I, you know, Saturday night, I'm going to be in Connecticut, but I'm going to be watching that game on my phone. My son has a basketball game, so I'm going to be watching him, looking at my phone, watching him. And I'm probably going to be like this, just look, because that's why I don't miss Tech games. I was at a Snoop Dogg Wu-Tang concert here in Prince William. True story. When Tech suffered its worst home loss since 1992, when Fuente was the quarterback, I mean, was the coach. And I said quarterback because that was the infamous night where he played three quarterbacks for no rhyme or reason. He played Quincy, and was it Hendon, and the other kid. It was just like they, and we got blown out by Duke at home 45-10. It was embarrassing.
In front of the 99 team, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the night he didn't speak to them.
Yep.
He didn't even know they were there. I don't really fault him for that, like some guys do. I've mentioned it because it's disappointing, but I think he was just overwhelmed by the loss. That was an ugly, embarrassing night on national TV because I was at the concert. Snoop came out, smoke everywhere, and I'm looking at my phone. My wife was like, "What's the score?" I'm like, "We're down 20." "What?" I'm like, "Yeah. Who we playing again? Duke."
Man, whew. Rough memories.
But again, the great thing about sports is you control this. We're just talking, sharing our thoughts, vibing on your great podcast. They can change the narrative. They control the narrative. They can dictate how we view them as fans, as observers, media guys. They control that. If they go out Saturday night and get a convincing win or a quality win, or even if they win by a field goal, you're bowl eligible. You're good.
Yep.
So even though you might, because UVA is capable, I don't think they're better than Tech, but you're now in bowl eligible. You can sell, like, we're going to a bowl. That's 2 years in a row we've gone to a bowl game. And we won a game on the road against a powerful opponent, you know, because it seems like we beat the powerful or power five opponents who are missing three quarterbacks, have mono, or, you know, one
Yeah.
kid stuck in the elevator. So, like, you win, you know, then you now you got some a little bit of confidence, and you got your last home game, senior night against UVA, night game. You have a really good chance to salvage whatever you have left of this season that remains. And then you go 7-5, you improve the bowl destination. And Tech's always going to get precedence over other teams in the ACC because Tech fans, Hokie Nation travels well. And we're still in a few fan bases that take bowl games seriously. So we're going to travel. I mean, I couldn't believe Tech fans went to the Sun Bowl.
Yeah.
The Sun Bowl against UCLA.
Yeah.
Logan Thomas got hurt and we got blown out, you know, but like,
yeah, Brett Hundley.
Yeah, Hundley. Yeah, man. So, yeah, you win that game, you're bowl eligible. And then you win that game against UVA, you finish the season. What's the SEC looking now? 3-2?
Yeah, something like that.
Is it 3-2 or 3-3? Is it 3-2?
I think it's 3-3. No,
three and two.
I think so. Yeah.
So then you again, I know the ACC is not the SEC, but then you finish your ACC record 5-2. See all of a sudden how that looks? People can say what they want to. Yeah, you had high expectations, all that nonsense, but at the end of the day, you win these next two. You're 5-2 in conference play, 7 wins, which ties the most you had as a coach of Virginia Tech, with a chance to get 8. That'll be your most wins as a coach. You end the season with 3 games, 3-game winning streak. You recruit the players. You're going to lose some to the portal. That's just the nature of the beast. But you bring in some other recruits, maybe flip a couple of kids that were undecided. Coach leaves because, you know, the offseason is the wild, wild west in college football and basketball. People move like crazy. So, you know, that's my motivation if I'm on that coaching staff. If I'm Coach Prime, that's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? You know, that would be what I'm trying to get to. Ironically, or I don't know if that's the right word or term, but like it seems to me we actually many times play better at Duke than we do hosting them at home. Have you noticed that? You know, like
yeah.
We typically play, it's weird. Like we really have, because I think there's a strong Virginia Tech alumni base in North Carolina, a lot of alumni down there. So we typically play well at Duke. So cheers to playing well at Duke this Saturday night.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Man, yeah. Dwight, dude, I appreciate you taking time, man, to come on here. And and get some therapy. Get some, you know, talk yeah. about it, talk it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I am a licensed therapist by day.
That's true.
I am.
That is
but
true.
No, I appreciate you. I'm always flattered with anybody. I've been on a lot of the podcasts with the tech community. I gotta start getting you guys on, me and Danny, man. But I'm not gonna lie, I've been so busy. I've taken a little bit of a break. We're recording every week. I got other stuff, other people I interview. But I'm going to try to get you on with me and Danny one day. And also, I've been on everywhere. Hokie Hangover and all the different ones, Boundary. So, Dan, I always see you when I come to the spring game. So, and I saw you at the bowl game, too. So, you're my guy, dude. We got to talk more. I appreciate you for having me on, man.
Yes, sir, man. Absolutely. And let's get this W on Saturday.
Yeah, man. I mean, contrary to what people think, I'm a positive outlook type dude. I'm a realist. I'm a rational, but like, I want to win, man. I want to be like 10-15 at night, and we're going into the fourth quarter, and we're up 14, and we're moving the ball. I really, you know, night games suck when you lose too, because now you got to go to bed. But you know, now I'm in a Twitter space, and it's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to figure out why the hell did we not throw on third. You know, it feels better when you win at night, because then you can, like, you know, okay, I can go to bed. Like, you know, it was an ugly win, or we won. You know, no one outside of Virginia Tech cares, but we care. And we're 6-5, buddy. You know, we're going to a bowl. And people will minimize bowl games and whatnot. It's not really about the bowl eligibility to me. It's about, for me, a winning record.
It's extra money, too, for the program.
Yeah, for the program. Yeah. So appreciate you, man. Thank you, D. Thank you for having me on, man.
Yes, sir, man. Absolutely. And always go Hokies, man.
Yes, go Hokies for sure. For life.
For life. Hokies.